You're listening to ABC Radio National, and this is the last instalment of the year that made me before Christmas 2025. Last year, around this time, we spoke with John Owen, the pastor and CEO of the Wayside Chapel. Well worth checking out that interview. But today we're joined by another person who's on duty on the 25th of December every year. The Reverend Pauline Harley is an Anglican priest and the rector of St Albans in the Queensland city of Toowoomba. Pauline is a standout in Toowoomba, in part due to her priestly collar, but the hot pink hair and the fact that she gets around on a Harley Davidson motorbike help as well. Reverend Pauline Harley, welcome to the year that made me.
Thank you. It's great to be here, but I just also want to point out that I'm the rector of the Toowoomba West Anglican Parish, which is St Albans and St Augustine's. And if we miss St Augustine's, they'll get upset with me.
Fair enough. Very inclusive. Good to set that tone. Thank you so much. Now, as listeners may have gathered during that clarification, your accent suggests that maybe you didn't grow up in Toowoomba. Where do you come from, Pauline?
I'm from New Zealand. I've just spent a week there, so the accent might have just kicked
going
back in.
Tell us about your early life.
So early in my life, my parents split up and I went to live with my mother, as you did back in those days. Mm. I had a twin sister and a brother. We all went with her, but eventually my sister went to live with my dad and my brother sort of flitted between the two. Unfortunately, my mum, what's probably recognised as today is severe mental illness, was not a very good mother. Went from boyfriend to boyfriend and got addicted to, first of all, cigarettes, then caffeine, and then codeine and so forth. So it created a lot of problems, and she went with the boyfriends. She would comply with them, and most of them weren't very good people.
And that obviously made things very tough for you and your siblings, no doubt. Indeed, you experienced homelessness on the streets of Christchurch as a teenager for 6 months. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this was after my sister had moved to my dad's. Mum had a particular boyfriend who didn't want children around, and I came home one day to find a box on the sidewalk with a note, "Don't come back." Mm. He just didn't want kids around for whatever reason, and I struggled a little bit then on the street for some unknown reason. I can't understand my brain at the time, but I guess being 15, didn't think to call for help from like grandparents or even make contact with my dad, who I hadn't spoken to for a while because mum had poisoned me against him. And then, spent the 6 months living behind dumpsters and hiding from the gangs. It was the height of the gang wars over there with all the hard drugs starting to come in. So
that sounds terrifying, Pauline. Yeah. How did you get through it?
It's like looking at a different person. I can't fully answer that. I don't know. It just obviously took day by day. I'd get scraps of food out of bins and things, and then ended up with a boyfriend that ultimately wasn't great for me. I moved into a caravan and with a friend's from school's father, and he was after more things than that. So it was difficult. And I thought the boyfriend was rescuing me and it was love. We eventually got married, but it turned out it wasn't love. It was just two people who paid attention to each other. And ultimately we had two kids together though.
So obviously some really, really tough experiences early on. Is there a point you can look back on or that you think of as a turning point, the time that maybe the trajectory in your life changed?
Certainly. It's just before 9/11 happened. I was here in Australia living on the Gold Coast. Had literally that week before 9/11 separated from my then husband with the two little kids. And my brother was killed. He had diabetes and he had a diabetic blackout. But fortunately, he was driving a four-wheeler at the time, putting cows away, and broke his atlas and died. But that week, I'd also had been feeling unwell, and I'd went to the doctors for blood tests. And while I was over in New Zealand, they were trying to contact me to say I had Ross River fever. On top of that, and I just thought it was just with the marriage breakup. I came back from New Zealand, and then 9/11 happened, and I just thought the world and my life was just chaos. If it had opened a big hole and swallowed me up, I was going to be happy. But then a few weeks later, I was doing a course to literally build computers, and it led me to the church.
Mm. Just briefly, Pauline, what made you decide to come to Australia?
So my then husband, we got married in New Zealand. We had one son, and he's of Chinese-Malaysian background. He was very compliant to his father, and he had a gambling issue in New Zealand, and there was a whole bunch of problems. And his father said, well, let's all just go to Australia, better opportunities in Australia. Naively thinking that all our problems would be left behind. But on the Gold Coast, there's a casino. So we came to Australia, bought a couple of businesses with the family trust, of his father's family trust, and I got pregnant with our second child, and, well, he went to the casino.
On the year that made me, we are speaking with the Reverend Pauline Harley. And Pauline, 2001 was obviously a really tough year for you, but you signaled that there was a turnaround, and it had to do with both building computers and God. Could you sort of elaborate on that connection for us?
Well, after I separated from my husband, after my brother's funeral and all that, I did a little TAFE course. It's 300 questions. You answer it, tells you what you should be good at. Mm. It said to be a counsellor. And I was like, no damn way. I've had enough issues in my life and problems. Why would I want to hear other people's problems? So I tried to run away from that. And I don't know, I saw an ad to build computers. So I went there, and the lecturer happened to belong to a particular church, which was St. Margaret's Narang on the Gold Coast. And he said, look, we can't offer you much, $20 for petrol, but give you some experience in the office if you like. So I went, what the heck? I've been in hospitality. Let's move away. Yep. I was terrified, because part of the community I grew up in New Zealand was a tiny community, and the two biggest gossips in town were the local GP and the local priest. So I was scared to meet the priest, but it turned out the Reverend David Cox was the angel that I needed in my life, and he was the most gentlest of persons. Didn't tell me I had to come to church. He saw a broken woman, and he was just such a kind and gentle soul towards me, and I now call him my Aussie dad. So he nurtured me, and then 2 years later, I actually don't even remember the day, because my brain was it was broken and trying to sort itself out, but I went to church.
Mm. So you mentioned that the local pastor you knew growing up didn't have the greatest reputation. Had God been a part of your life during those really tough years, Pauline?
My only introduction to church growing up was that my mum would do the gardens at the church on the outside, so I didn't step foot into that church. We all knew in the local community who the priest was. And then once a year, my grandmother would take all her old friends to the midnight mass for Christmas, and we were expected to help take them in and out of the car into the church and back, but we weren't permitted to go inside. We had to sit outside and wait. So that's my only experience, really, of church and faith growing up, so not really positive.
And you mentioned your mum would do the gardens. You've also tried your hand at many things before becoming a priest. What sort of jobs have you done in your day?
So in New Zealand, my then husband and his family had a fish and chip shop with fresh fish. So I was a fishmonger and fish and chip shop there. And when we came to Australia, we became a baker through Muffin Break. We had a business here. And then obviously I tried the building the computers. And then when I started to get this inkling that God wanted me to look at ordained ministry, I tried to run away from that and was like, no way. I see how hard some of the priests and pastors work here. I'm not going down that track. So I decided I'd investigate going into being border control person. So I started down that track before it was like literally slammed shut, and God's going, I want you doing this.
And how exactly does God let you know that, Pauline?
For me personally, it's this voice in my head, and it sounds funny to most people, but God speaks to me in this older lady's voice. And it's just through also confirmation through others. So the church where I was at and had got to know as my home church at Narang, David eventually left there, and we had locum priests, and I didn't know them from a bar of soap. They would come to me after the service and said, well, during that service, I felt like God was saying you should look at ordained ministry. And after about the fourth or fifth time of this strange priest telling me this, I thought I better pay attention.
And when you made that decision, what does it involve? How long did it take?
So first of all, we have to do what's called a seeking year. And they talk about the processes during that year. And then you get invited into the discernment process. It's another year. And at the end of the discernment process, which is pretty intense because it involves psychological and medical evaluations as well as intense interviews with examining chaplains. So you go into the formation program here in our diocese. That's how it works in our diocese. Then it's minimum 3 years in formation, and then minimum two years as a curate. So it's quite a long process. And alongside that in formation, for the Southern Queensland Anglican Diocese, we're required to have a theological degree. So I had to go to uni and get my degree in theology, which is daunting for someone who never finished high school.
Yeah, absolutely. So life-changing in more ways than one. On the Year That Made Me, we are speaking with the Reverend Pauline Harley from St. Albans and St. Augustine's Churches in Toowoomba West's Anglican Parish in Queensland. And Pauline, we've heard about God coming into your life. I wouldn't for a second suggest that these are on the same level, but when did Harley Davidson and pink hair come into your life?
I've always had a love for bikes. Funnily enough, one of my mum's better boyfriends got me to love bikes. He took me on a holiday on the back of his bike years ago. So one of the things that you do as a priest is you bury people and you do a lot of end-of-life stuff, and they have a lot of regrets, a lot of people. Mm. I thought coming to Toowoomba, where this was my first appointment as priest in charge of a parish, I'm not going to have those regrets. So I'm going to get my motorbike license. If you remember the movie with Arnie on the Harley, that's me. So I did the course when I got up here. As for the pink hair, after I got married the second time around, I met a beautiful man, Peter, my husband. He's been absolutely the amazing person in my life. I went to a friend who was a hairdresser and I said, look, I want a different look. And she said, let's do pink. And it's stuck since. I'm known in town. Everyone knows me as the pink-headed priest on the bike with the tattoos.
I was going to ask you whether there have been any previous priests in the diocese who've had either pink hair or a Harley Davidson. I hadn't even thought about tattoos.
Yes. My first holiday here, when I went on leave from the church, I came back and they said, what did you do on your holiday? So I went and got a tattoo with my son. There are other females in our diocese who have different coloured hair, and there are a few priests that actually ride, I don't know about Harleys, but they ride motorbikes.
Oh, there you go.
A few. Yeah.
Good to know. I've read, Pauline, that Cursillo has been a significant part in your life. What is Cursillo, and could you tell us about the role it's played for you?
Sure. Cursillo is a Christian weekend away. You get sponsored by people in your parish. And for me, Cursillo was, again, one of those turning points where Reverend David and his wife Phil looked after my two kids for me while I did the weekend. And at the end of that weekend, my heart had gone cold. Really, it was closed and I guess stone cold. And apart from the love of my children, I didn't really know what love was. And at the end of that, there was this little crack in my heart for me, which literally hurt, where all of a sudden I realized that God loved me and the realization that I was allowed to be loved by others. And it was significant. So when I went back to the parish, as a single mum who was struggling and had four part-time jobs just to keep food on the table and pay the rent type thing, I went back to the church and said, look, I want to give everything in my life to God, my time, my talent, including my treasure. And so that's what I did. And I declared that publicly. I got confirmed after that. And Cursillo also helped me realize that I needed to get a lot more help. So there was some healing workshops at the church, and then I went on and got some professional help to help deal with my past and to forgive my mother and my father.
Yes, obviously you've had to deal with huge challenges in your life. How do they inform your ministry today?
So I have a passion to helping the other, the disadvantaged, especially the homeless. And a year into my appointment here in Toowoomba, an opportunity came up for the parish to be involved in what's called Winter Shelter Toowoomba, under Stable One from Melbourne. And I put it to the parish that this is a doable hands-on ministry where we can really get involved in our community. And obviously I was very passionate when I'm talking about it, so they all said yes, even though they was really, really frightened of the homeless. They hadn't engaged with homeless people before, with the typical stereotypes. And I remember the first Saturday night where the homeless slept in our church hall, the reaction from my parishioners was, oh, they're so normal. They've just got a story to tell. And we've been doing it 5 years now, and everyone can't wait for winter to do winter shelter. So it's a fantastic program and involvement. From that, the first year I realised that homeless people were equally as scared to come into a Christian space. And so I wanted to do a little bit more on a personal level, not just for the church, but for my personal faith and works related to faith in me. I just love helping my community. So I got involved in what's called Tony's Community Kitchen. It's a soup kitchen, operates every night of the year here in Toowoomba, and got to know a lot of the homeless people. And then we gained a reputation, Winter Shelter, and like the mayor and the council right behind the program now.
Could you tell us about some of the people you've met through Winter Shelter and people who've, you know, come back as volunteers over time?
Sure. There's a few standouts. There's a gentleman, Clayton, who's actually done a ABC interview with you guys. He'd been on the streets, I think it was 7 years. The first time I met him, he came into our shelter. I was calling him an ambulance. His heart had a problem, and people visited him in the hospital, and he couldn't believe that we cared. And he thought, well, if you care, maybe I should care about myself. And he came back into the shelter a few weeks later after getting out of hospital. And on the Sunday morning, he came into the church and just sat at the back of the church. And I'll never forget it, because he sat there and halfway through my sermon, he just cried and he cried and he cried. And I didn't need to preach that day to say, this is why we have Winter Shelter, this is why we help people. And he went on to get a unit, which he's still in 5 years later, got a job, reconnect with his family, got his life back on track. So he's one I will now call friend. And there's another fellow, Max, he's been in and out of the Winter Shelter a few times. He has volunteered. He's back on track now, doing a traineeship in hospitality. But he's become one that I've got to know really well. But I'd say the one that's had the biggest influence on me was this gentleman who, at the end of our second year, he had diabetes. He got sick because he couldn't store his diabetic medication in a fridge. Through Winter Shelter, we were able to do that for him. He got a little bit better. We found accommodation for him. And he was a father who could have week on week off access to his children, and being homeless, he couldn't have that access. And then by getting a home and us helping set him up and support him, his children were able to reconnect with him. And they came up to us at the end of the program and said, thank you for giving Daddy back. And that's when you realise that it's not just about the individual, it's the families and the others involved in that person's life.
Reverend Pauline Harley, we've heard about some pretty significant years in your life already. 2001 was a shocker, but obviously very significant. 2006, the year of your first Cursillo retreat, obviously had a shaping influence on your life, but you've chosen another year as the year that made you. Which year have you chosen, Pauline, and why?
I think I said it was 2011. It was
yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, it's not too late to change, though, if you want to pick another one.
No, 2011, the year I married Peter, because when we got married, the day we were getting married, the priest that was marrying us, I had a plethora of creeps there. I can't tell you how full the church was full of. And my actual father from New Zealand came over, who professes to be an atheist. So it was daunting for him. David came up to my Peter and said, look, I need to have a chat with you. And he had the collar on and he gave the priestly father chat. And then he took the collar off and he said, now I'm giving you the father chat. Don't hurt my girl type thing. But then there's a couple of people that came up to us or came to me and said, look, before you get married, I need to say God's been talking to me in a dream and I need you to listen to this, and it's, you need to think about ordained ministry. For me, that was like a big slap from God, because at that point I was still trying to run away from that. And so I had to go off for a little while and sit in an outdoor chapel area before the ceremony to really have a conversation with God. And so in that conversation, it was, God, I get the message. You want me to look at this ordained ministry, but can I have a year with Peter? We've got two families coming together. I had a few little health issues to sort out. Can I please get that all done and us form a family? And at the end of the year, I promised to look at ordained ministry. And towards the end of the year, I just get the message, don't forget your promise. Don't forget your promise. Sorry, I didn't.
Oh, that's great to hear. And good to hear that God was willing to give you and Peter a bit of downtime together.
Yeah, it was like before. A peace. Yeah. Like this peace came over me. Yeah.
It's fantastic speaking with you, Pauline. And you mentioned that your father came over to your wedding in 2011. And you also talked about spending a bit of time getting some professional help in terms of your relationship with your parents. Would you be willing to speak a little bit more about that? Tell us where you got to in terms of the relationship with your parents and your feelings about them?
Sure. With my dad, because my mum had poisoned me against him, and it wasn't until I was about 18 or 19 that I confronted him, and I should have realised that everything that she said to me about everything else was a lie, but she'd made me hate him so much. And then I realised that he was had faults too, that's for sure, but some of the stuff she said was just utter nonsense. So what I discovered is you can't turn hate off that quickly. It's a process, and that's helped me in my ministry to understand that. But at the same time, my father and I have a very good relationship now, and I do call him dad, but I don't actually see him as a dad. He never really was dad to me growing up. But he's a fantastic grandfather. He's been a fantastic great-grandfather to my grandkids as well. So we have a really a good, respectful relationship now, and he very much respects Reverend David Cox, who I call my Aussie dad, and he knows that David's had a profound influence on my life, and he's very pleased for that. With my mother, it's a little bit more complicated. In 2015, she had a massive stroke where her head went through a car window, and my sister and I went to Christchurch. My sister was in the North Island, I was here. We went over, and she was supposed to be caring for my grandmother, but she had become a hoarder. And worse than those shows that you see on TV, and those TV shows don't the smell is not recorded on the TV. But we put her into care after that. My grandmother into care, who subsequently died. And then my mother ended up with vascular dementia. And she never admitted in her life that she had done wrong to us, not just me, but anyone else in the family. Never admitted. So it really was hard to forgive her. But I came to that point, and my sister and I made sure she was looked after until she died in 2019, I think it was. We made sure that she was looked after. I always say I love my mother because she gave birth to me and I wouldn't be here, but I don't like her as a person.
Thanks for talking about those really intimate, difficult things, Pauline. When you described the other priests in Queensland who are on motorbikes and different coloured hairs, I thought, well, maybe everything's really wild up there in Queensland, but there must be some parts of the Anglican church who are a bit more conservative. How have you found the reception in your churches, and how do you deal with parishioners who might not have the same sort of worldview or even beliefs as you?
Well, when it was announced that I was coming to the Toowoomba West Anglican Parish, there were parishioners who disagreed with having a female as the leader of the church, and they chose to leave the parish before I got there. The first time parishioners met me, we came up on Boxing Day, and I started in the January, and sometime that week we had an event at the pub, local pub, and invited them to come and meet us. But that first service was, for some, they did a double take with the hair.
You didn't drive up to the church in the Harley, did you?
I didn't have it at that stage. It was six months later I got it. But yeah, they did a double take. But there is a person who interviewed me from the church. Funnily enough, she's got purple hair, very bright purple hair. So whenever we are, because she's what we call a liturgical assistant, and she helps out at the services. And so whenever her and I are behind the altar together, if you've got new people coming into the church, there is a look to think, what the heck is happening in this church?
Well, I'm not surprised that once people have got to know you, they've come to appreciate your role in the church. Pauline, it's been great speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on The Year That Made Me.
Thank you. It's been lovely to talk with you.
And we always finish The Year That Made Me, Pauline, with a piece of music. What song have you chosen for us today and why?
It's Do Something by Matthew West. It's always been in my head. And if you hear the first few lyrics, you know, if you get angry at God for the problems in the world, and why, God, why don't you do something? And he says, I did, I created you. And so that's why I like to help, because he created each of us to do something.
Reverend Pauline Harley, thank you once again.
Thank you.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.